Hi, I'm Jaime Rodriguez. I'm a WPF evangelist, and today I'm here with Uni, a member of the Expression Blend team, and we're going to talk a little bit about how Expression Blend is built. So Uni, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a program manager on the Expression Blend team. I've been working on Blend pretty much all my career at Microsoft, four and a half, five years now. I joined back in the days when we were called Sparkle or Interactive Designer. And since then, we have shipped almost two versions and a couple of service packs, and now we're working actively on our third version. So things have come along a long, long way, and I'm totally excited with what Blend 3 is going to bring about to the space.
Cool. So what we're going to cover today is how people build WPF apps.
Right.
And Blend is a WPF app. I see you have it open in Designer. So why don't you walk us through how it opens in Designer, how you guys build it, and then I do have a set of questions that I'll ask you just for consistency, because we're comparing answers to other design agencies and other firms.
So I was actually, first I'll start off by showing you a quick demo of editing Blend inside Blend. So here I have Blend Expression Blend to Service Pack 1. I have the welcome screen that I'm dragging around, which is our actual product welcome screen. So I'm going to close this, and what you see here inside our design surface is the design surface rendering of the welcome screen. So you can see that it's pixel perfect. So if I let's bring up the welcome screen again, you can see that it looks very similar to what it does at runtime. I can actually view various tab items by selecting them in the object tree, and of course I can do all my design tasks inside Blend. What I actually wanted to focus on was how we actually make some of this possible, because designing Blend inside Blend is a far more complex problem than what most ISVs or LOB developers or designers would actually ever encounter. So I wanted to actually switch back into Visual Studio and talk a little bit about how we organize our code and our resources and how all this comes together. And I also wanted to take the time to talk about some of the gotchas that people will run into when they actually try to write code that is toolable. So to start with, one of the most common challenges that people face is basically creating user interface pieces which are reusable. And in the WPF land, that is majorly accomplished using resources. So here I have Expression Blend source code open inside Visual Studio. You can see that we use TFS for source control, so all the icons for TFS show up. Our system is really simple. If you know Expression Blend, we have two different look and feels. So there is the Expression Dark look and feel and the Expression Light look and feel, and a consistent set of styles that apply across these two look and feels. So the way we do that is we actually factorize our resources into three distinct categories. There are the colors. So in the case of Expression Dark and Light, the set of colors are different. Then there are a set of brushes, which are actually composed from these colors. So they just look up colors using resource lookups, and brushes are basically a composition of colors. And then there are styles. So styles can actually refer to brushes mostly, but they could also refer to various colors. So in total, our product has just three resource dictionaries. So in this case, what I have open here is Style Score, which is our definition of styles. I have Expression Light Theme, which as you can see is nothing but a bunch of colors, and Expression Light.xaml, which is basically the way we merge in the resource dictionaries. So you can see that the Expression Light.xaml is just a combination of Style Score and the Expression Light Theme, which is the definition of the various colors that we just talked about. So it's really straightforward and simple organization. Let's actually delve into a couple details in here. So in Style Score, we basically have, I think, three categories of resources. We have margins, so that we have consistency across the various layouts that we use in our product and have consistent spacing across buttons and borders and things like that. So you can see that there's a bunch of margins are nothing but thickness resources and a bunch of double values. We have a large number of styles. My guess is we would have probably around, let's say, 50 or so styles for various controls like buttons and expanders and type controls and radio buttons and and some of our custom controls that we have as well for Expression. And that's pretty much it. And if I switch back into Expression Light.xaml or Expression Light Theme.xaml, we have about, I don't know, maybe like 50 or so brushes. I can't really count. Let's see. So there are about I don't know, 50 or 60 brushes and 50 or 60 colors. So this is pretty much what Expression is about. Now.
So before you go, I have to ask you something. Because your resources are fairly, you're fairly organized nowadays.
Yes.
Did you guys start this way? Was it three files all along? Because I deal with companies that kind of like, hey, I'm designing these three control templates, and they kind of keep things separate. And then eventually, before they ship or something, they said, oh, okay, now it's time to merge.
Right.
You're pretty organized today. Did you start this way?
Actually, no. Back in the day when we were doing our very early prototypes, we didn't have the concept of two different themes or the ability to switch between dark and light. So we had pretty much one huge, gigantic resource dictionary with every single entry. We didn't even have like brushes defined. So we were like defining local values all over the place. Mm-hmm. So we had to do a cleanup pass to basically move some of these resources out into more common locations and reuse them. So in our day-to-day prototyping activities, it so happens that designers who use Blend to actually define some of our UI don't even like actually use some of these resources to start with. They just like hard code their values all over the place. And then, you know, once they are comfortable with the interactions of that particular design and, you know, how it generally looks and feels, they actually worry about fine-tuning it to reuse some of these resources. And in some cases, developers help them actually, you know, pull out some of these, you know, redundant values from their XAML and, you know, either create a new resource if that particular resource doesn't exist or reuse existing resources. So the workflow has evolved to a stage where, you know, we have a standalone project. Often it's pretty cumbersome to open the entire solution just to define a small piece of UI. So we could take the resource dictionary, create a standalone project which essentially just has those resources. Designers could quickly mock up some UI in there, and you're already reusing some of these XAML resources in there. So you can just like cut and paste that back into our source code. Or, as I showed you before, you could just open the entire source tree if you want, source code inside our product, and you know, make some tweaks and hit F5. Again, designing Blend inside Blend is not, most people will have a far more easier time than what we have for this particular scenario, because there are some technical issues.
Okay, so you have three resource dictionaries. You have all your themes, and or you kind of have you work to rebrush these themes. What do you do about some things like converters and stuff like that? I'm assuming those are...
Right. So our theme files themselves don't have too many converters defined. As you can see, I don't think there are any, pretty much. Our converters are all used in our various bits and pieces UIs. You know, for example, if you want to actually hide an element when a Boolean is flipped in the model, then we use a Boolean to visibility converter or something. All of these are actually interspersed across the board in various XAML files. We don't have like a common collection of converters that we reuse. We could do that, but I don't think because our UIs are, there are two cases here. Where we want to optimize, we really optimize hard, you know, so we reuse resources and things like that. But then modal UI and things like that, where, you know, we could totally new up a new resource and use that, we don't have that kind of sharing across the board. It is true, all of our brushes and styles are shared across the board. We have no duplicate brushes or resources. As much as possible, we don't try to duplicate them. We just like reuse them from one central location. But for converters, we don't actually have a central repository of converters that we can use.
Okay. What about, as I look through, do you have a kind of a organizing XAML convention? I saw kind of two patterns that people ask about. You see here.
One attribute.
You see the kind of the one-liner, which is a really long line. And then you see the one-liner or the one attribute per line type thing. Do you guys have a...
Yeah, I mean, so there is some inconsistency here. And if I had a chance to revisit all this, and, you know, it's not that difficult to clean up because it's just XML and, you know, there are tools out there that process this very well. But if I had a chance to, you know, clean up some of this, some of the absolute, my favorite practices would include having the names and keys of resources defined right at the beginning, so it's very easy for you to like quickly squim, go over your XAML and take a look at, you know, what the name is or what the key is. That's one practice that I would highly encourage. The other practice that I really like and I've seen people use is they kind of bucket their properties into different classes. So there is the layout properties, there is the appearance properties, and they kind of have one line per category. You know, I think I agree with people's observations that it's not quite optimal to have like hundreds of properties on a line, and often it goes into, you know, usually you have 10 or 20 properties because you want to precisely control the look and feel of an element. So like a compromise approach where you have certain sets of properties on certain lines, I think works very well. And many people in our source code, since we have tons of developers and hence tons of approaches, I think many this is starting to be the common consensus approach that many people are starting to use, because it creates fairly readable markup. And Expression Blend and Visual Studio, for that matter, have source code preservation. So if you were to actually type up XAML like this and use Blend to edit a certain property, we almost always try to preserve the formatting so we don't actually reorder or realign these properties in various fashion as much as we can. So that's useful as well.
So will Blend ever get to the point where it does some of the things that you said, like name first?
Oh, absolutely. For Blend 3, names will always be first no matter what you do. So unless you explicitly decide to actually add name an element somewhere else, if we were to create a name, you would always put it as the first element for the next version of Blend. That's something that we have fixed based on customer feedback. The other thing we have fixed is a number of, we do a great job of source code preservation, but we have made some improvements there as well. We would like to have people have better control over formatting. So if they could choose to have a new attribute on a line or on the same line, those kinds of options are still not there, but we are actively working towards some of those issues as well.
So I'll be able to say I want a new attribute every line or something like that.
That's where we would like to go to. Yes,
five.
Yes.
Okay.
Again, we have to prioritize. But we have fixed some of the issues that were more common, like, our names were all over the place, and it was really difficult for people reading XAML to actually find where an element was. So we've made it such that we now always put the attribute at the beginning of the line.
Since we're talking about names, I'll ask you a name question that comes often, which is, what do you name on a XAML project? There's people that say every single element must be named.
Right.
There's people that say no element should be named, and
right,
everything should be whatever, view model or some other way. There's some other way to get to all those properties.
Let me, for example, open, let's say, one of our source code files. So let me open our create project dialog. So if you take a look at this file, you will see that pretty much every element is named. We try to keep the name as prominent in the XAML as possible, because our test team actually uses this name to essentially automate our UI. Now, about conventions, we try to actually use the type name at the end of the name. So for example, in this case, it's called description text block.
Hmm.
The type of the property is text block, and we actually append the functionality to that particular type name. So in this case, it's the description text block in the create project dialog, and therefore it's called description text block. So we try to use some conventions. Again, there is some amount of inconsistency here, but this is also now, as we are becoming more and more of a mature product, I think these things are starting to take shape and move along. But it is true that when we started, we were also experimenting with various ways of doing things. I think now the pattern is starting to emerge, and it's, I think, working very well for us.
Okay. What about a common one that comes out often too is namespaces.
Right.
And I don't know if you have the problem in Blend, but to me, a very common one is I'll define 10 XML namespaces.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the namespaces is arguably very, religious almost, where some people like really long names, some people like short names.
Yeah, we tend to prefer short names. Usually. Now, our best practice there is for control vendors who actually write these controls, or for people who, to use the XMLNS prefix and definition attributes, so they can actually specify good default names. So when tools instantiate these controls, we can use the names that, for example, if I was to do a data grid, I don't want like system.windows.controls as my, or .datagrid as my namespace prefix. I want more like, or system underscore. What I really want is dg:datagrid, in which case, all you need to do is in the control library specify an XMLNS prefix or definition attribute, and then we will use that for your control. In our case, you can see that we use fairly short names as much as we can, because it makes the markup a little bit more readable.
Okay. Which I think I kind of answer. One of the common questions that people do is generic.xaml tends to get really, really big.
Right.
So a lot of people split it up into multiple resource dictionaries. From what I saw, you guys have one.
Right.
one big generic.xaml. You don't split it up into...
I mean, it is not generic.xaml from the technical sense of the word, but it's theoretically that because it defines the look for all of our controls. Because we are reskinning some of the system controls, you know, so it's not theoretically generic.xaml, but it is true that we have one huge resource dictionary that contains all of our resources. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand some of, you know, in our case, most of the resources are being used most of the time, because most our UI is basically a bunch of buttons and radio buttons and expanders and checkboxes and tab controls. So, and plus some of our controls that we have written from scratch. So it's not that big of a concern, but if people do have concerns, then you know, we should talk about how they can make their solutions such that they are still toolable inside Blend. But it is true that, you know, our source code has nothing but one huge resource dictionary. And then, of course, where, you know, certain UI pieces where we don't need to reuse resources, we have local values of resources as well.
Okay.
But our bulk is in this couple set of resource dictionaries that we have.
Now, that's interesting because you have one big resource dictionary. You know, to me, when I do local resources within files, I tend to do static resources.
Right.
Yet, as I'm looking through your code, most resources look dynamic to me.
Yes, yes.
So where do you guys stand on this whole static versus dynamic? I know that Blend generates always dynamic.
Right. So so we prefer dynamic resources for various reasons. But it is true that, you know, in our code, we pretty much try to use dynamic resources wherever possible because theme switching is an important scenario for us. So when the theme is switched, all we are doing is removing a resource dictionary which defines a different set of brushes and replacing that with another set of brushes, essentially. So for us, it's an important scenario to be using dynamic resources. Now, in some cases where, you know, a style is never going to be switched out, it's going to look the same for static, for light theme and dark theme. All it's going to do is, you know, update some brushes. In that case, the style reference itself can be static, but all of the references that the style has are dynamic in nature. So I think I've heard this a lot. A lot of people have concerns about performance and things like that. But based on our own source code and our experience, it has not worked out like that. I think we are fairly happy with where performance is. Of course, there's always room for improvement everywhere. But you know, performance is not a big it's not a scenario that is blocking our usage of static and dynamic resources. It's working out for us. Now we can also talk about like cases where people have to use static resources because, for example, you can't use a dynamic resource where you don't have a dependency property. You can only you have to have a dependency property for using a dynamic resource.
Mm-hmm.
So there are cases where people cannot use a static resource. And we can talk about, you know, what are the workarounds that they have to do to make it all toolable inside Blend.
So that's actually workarounds or best practice, things that you said, well, here's some things we've tried that, you know, didn't work for us. Do you have anything that you can share there?
Yeah, or? Yeah. So, and let's not take Blend as an example, but let me just go out there in the wild and come up with a couple of observations that I have. Often, like, you know, what people do is they basically build an application completely, you know, end-to-end, it works. And then they pass it over to the designer, asking them to skin the application or style the application, without ever taking into consideration that a tool would be involved in manipulating the XAML and, you know, the UI. So when a designer then opens this particular application inside Blend or Visual Studio, there are a lot of exceptions all over the place because of multiple reasons. So one common thing that we see people do is they have custom controls where their code is actually running when they instantiate that inside our tool. When that happens, you often make assumptions that you're not supposed to make. For example, if you make an assumption about the fact that, you know, application.current is your application, that's not the case when you're running inside Blend. You're in the app domain of our process, and therefore application.current is the Blend process. Or it's the Blend app, you know, you're referring to Blend essentially when you do that. So for these cases, what you need to do is there's a way for you to check when your code is running inside the design tool. And when that's the case, you could easily turn off your code from running. So there are a number of similarly, like, you know, let's say you had a user control where you wanted to refer a static resource. Now when you instantiate that user control inside some other document in Blend, the static resource reference looks up at the Blend resources, not at your resources, the way we do things. And therefore it throws an exception because it can't be found. So one workaround for this particular problem is to basically move out the static resource reference from your XAML into your code. I know it's not the most, it's not the best way, but this is a workaround. And then you can essentially not run this code when you're running inside Blend. So you can, you know, you can, you're essentially doing this resource assignment in your code, and you're basically conditioning the code such that it doesn't run when it runs inside the tool, and therefore it all works just fine. So there are these like small tricks that you have to do to make things work. But once things work, you are so much productive with XAML and by using Blend that I think it's like really worth the extra amount of time that you have to invest in little minor cleanups here and there. And you often don't run into this once you establish a pattern and a practice. Yeah. And this is where we are trying to get to with this conversation anyway. So I hope some of these are useful.
Yep. So what about the other one that Blend, or a lot of people get struggle with in Blend, is app.xaml.
Right.
Do you guys use app.xaml?
Right. No. So our product itself does not use app.xaml because we don't want automatic generation of the static void main thing, because we control various things like licensing and splash screens and when the app is launched.
Okay.
So a trick that we use, and this is there on our blog, is you can essentially conditionally include your app.xaml into your solution so that when the solution is open inside Blend, Blend thinks of it as an app.xaml is there. And therefore, it can do all the things that it does, like resolving resources that are included into app.xaml and things like that. So our source code itself uses this technique to enable us to design Blend inside Blend. So you can see that, you know, and this is there explained on our blog as to how you could do this. We have a conditional include in this case of Blend application.xaml. And let's take a real quick look at Blend application.xaml. It is essentially, we are in this, when what we are saying with this inclusion is that when Blend is open inside Blend, always design our UI as if dark theme was there. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, at runtime, we would actually load, as you can see in our code, we are essentially loading the dark theme dynamically. So I could easily replace this with light theme, and we would load up the light theme. Versus this particular XAML file and this inclusion of the XAML file in the project is helping our tool figure out that you're essentially wanting to design with the dark theme in mind, and you can easily switch that if you wanted to the light theme.
And for other users, you can use the same conditional compile to include their app.xaml, which is not by default included in Blend.
I mean, the default projects that Blend creates uses app.xaml, but people actually take them out because they don't want automatic generation of the app.xaml semantics, essentially. So, and they write their code, create their windows, and initialize their app domain, do various kinds of things before they actually present WPF content to their users. In those cases, yes, it does help a lot if you were to help the tool with this few lines of project file tricks.
So just to make sure, I don't delete app.xaml, and I always thought Blend somehow blocks my resources that are defined in app.xaml from getting to my user controls. Or maybe that was Blend 1.0.
Right, I don't think that should be a problem, but...
So you're saying if I have an app.xaml in my app, that should go all the way down to my user controls?
Yes, it should. And we can take a 1 second quick look at the scenario. So let's create this WPF application. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna create a button. Let's create a simple, let's say there is a text box.
And let's just put a brush in app.xaml.
Yep. So I have a button. This is my simple forms application. I'm going to make a control out of it. So I'm going to call this forms control. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually make the background of this control a brush. So let's make this some red color. Make this a brush. I'm going to store this in application.
Yep.
And I'm going to come back to window.xaml and build. And I have my brush being
now. If you
referenced.
Open the control,
yeah. If I open the control, it'll be still using the resource from app.xaml. And if I can essentially in the other document, which is window1.xaml, I can still use that app.xaml resource. So this scenario works fairly well. Now it is true that a lot of people don't have app.xaml in their projects, and therefore when they open up there, let's take a look at that. So if I was to go in here and delete this thing. There you go, bam. And then you get all these like warnings saying that, oh, I don't get my app.xaml. And therefore, you have to use this technique to actually simulate your application XAML.
Well, that makes sense. I thought before that it actually somehow, maybe it's blend one or it was probably blend beta where somehow I thought we guys blocked.
Right.
Because otherwise I remember maybe early in beta where I used to pick up the blend resources.
Right. No. That should all be taken care of.
I was taken care of. Yeah. Cool. What about, so you talked about the get it, you know, get is in design mode, like functionality for people that are writing code that is runs better at the same time. What about like the attributes like content, categories? I seem to, I'm mixed about when I use them, whether they work.
Right.
Honestly, I'd never really paid attention to how critical they are and how useful they can be.
Right. So there are a certain set of properties that are very easy to use and configure, and they give you a lot of value for what they are worth. So for example, something, if you actually two mouse over one of these properties, you get a good description which actually describes what the property does. In this case, it's gets or sets the opacity, which affects the UI, blah, blah, blah. So this is actually, this is user specifiable using the description attribute. So if you were to expose a property that you were to expect your designer to be able to set in a property grid, it's quite useful to actually write just a small description attribute that they can use to actually configure the control. Similarly, it's very easy for you to specify a category attribute, which causes the properties to be categorized into various categories that Blend likes. You know, so if you have, let's say, a property that manipulates something that looks like an appearance property, then you can easily move that property into the appearance category. We also have an extensibility point, which lets you specify various other attributes so that your runtime control is still light and small, but its design time variant has essentially all the metadata that is actually used for better blendability, let's call it that way. In that case, you could, let's say you had a control that you didn't want your designer to ever touch, you could make it such that it would never show up in your custom controls tab. So there is an editable, I think it's called editor browsable or something like that, and you can quickly turn off the browsability of that particular, or toolbox browsable attribute. You can quickly turn off the browsability of certain properties and controls and things like that. Those are all doable as well. With Blend 3, we are bringing a lot more extension points, so you could essentially, it's difficult for me to describe them right now, but there's going to be a lot more easy customizability of things that you can do, where you get like a lot of bang for the buck. Without actually writing too much code at all.
So where can I get the list of the attributes that I could, you know, that Blend uses?
And it's not just that Blend uses them. Visual Studio 2008 Designer also uses them, and we'll have the same, we'll have compatibility. So if you were to write your control in Blend 2 or Visual Studio 2008, it'll also work in Visual Studio 2010 and Blend 3. So we share the same set of attributes, and all these are documented on MSDN as a part of the Visual Studio Design Surface Extensions document.
So send me a link afterwards, and we'll put it with when we put the video. Anything else that you think, hey, if you're organizing a project or creating a WPF project, this is what you should do?
Some of the other gotchas that people run into is, like I said, they have these huge complex applications that they actually open inside Blend, and it doesn't quite work. And they are trying to figure out, you know, whether it's their problem. Sometimes it's their problem. Sometimes it's the tool that's not behaving well. So one easy way of actually knowing if it's your problem or not is to, Blend is just a CLR application. You could essentially use Visual Studio to attach to process to Blend, put a break on exceptions flag on, and then debug essentially, and you run through your repro, and you'll be able to catch the exception, and you'll be surprised at how many times, you know, it's something that you're assuming in your code, which is not true when your code is actually open inside as a design tool. And often people come back and say, hey, look, my application works just fine when it's running, and the design tool is always almost giving problems. There are these small things that you can tweak, essentially, which for example, preventing the code from running, or taking out the static resource reference and moving it elsewhere, or converting it to a dynamic resource. These kinds of things can immediately result in a lot of productivity gains by making small tweaks. So this is, again, on our blog, we have documented the set of steps that you have to do to debug Blend per se. And it sounds like, you know, scary process, but it's like two clicks away, and you can easily find out where your problems are.
Yeah, the problem is usually for me, I used to just email you and say there's a problem here.
Right.
Now I figure out like 80% of those are mine.
Right, so
it does add.
And often, we shouldn't wash our hands saying, you know, we have lots of work to do as well, as always. So, but, you know, if you make these small you know, adjustments, I think it helps.
Yeah, attaching definitely. A debugger and enabling exceptions. And
to be clear, like in most, when you're actually using Blend to create your applications from scratch, we try to do as best as we can to keep you away from, you know, invalid states and things like that. It is often that it happens that you're typing all your XAML by hand inside Visual Studio, and then you essentially try and design that or pass it over to someone who wants to design it for you, and then that particular person has problems opening that particular solution inside Blend. So these are cases where we can definitely do better.
Now, one last question that I was just thinking of as I'm walking and looking through the list. Does Blend do anything with the parts? You know that we have a kind of a naming convention mm-hmm. of if you have a control template, mm-hmm. do part underscore whatever. First of all, as the Blend team builds their own controls, do you guys follow those conventions? And second, those Blend, I don't think they're enforced, but, you know, I want to make sure they're not.
So, like you know, our application is highly data-driven. So we just use the model view controller or model view model, whichever you want to call it, that pattern to present the view on top of the model, which is pure, which has no idea about the view. So it is potentially possible we could rip out WPF and replace with a different UI technology and it'll still almost work, you know, without too much. I mean, of course, I'm not going to do that, but it's doable. So in that particular world, you essentially do not ever have the notion of finding elements by name. So we don't actually write controls that look up into templates by names, but we do use user controls a lot. So for example, our create project dialog, again, let's take a real quick look at that. This new project dialog is just a user control. So if I was to go back into create project dialog.xaml, let me go back into the code file for that. There, it's create project item, same thing. So you can see that, you know, this dialog is a, you know, is a window, which is our user control content thing. And then you can see that there are some cases where we are actually looking up this dot, you know, element name by name, you know, and things like that. So there are places where we essentially use naming conventions, but mostly they are in user controls. Our code does not actually use the whole notion of naming elements and templates and finding them. We use either data templates or user controls.
Have a lot of custom controls.
Yeah, it's our. I understand a lot of people out there might actually need them but ours is more of a model view kind of architecture, and therefore we don't quite need that much naming conventions to be followed as much as some of the other applications out there.
So I'm just curious if you guys have any stats. How big is Blend? Do you ever do that?
Yeah, no, we have done it before. I think we have, and this was Blend 2 timeframe. So like I said, I'm so excited about Blend 3 and what's coming. And there's a lot of code changes as well to accompany that. We had about 300,000 lines of XAML. And it's like 500,000 lines of C# code. It's pretty much what we have for our entire application. It's about a half million lines of C#. XAML, I don't exactly remember, but it's in like the same ballpark as well. So our XAML investments are huge. Wow. Like we have a lot of XAML. So there is nowhere in our source code, nowhere do we actually create elements in code. Nowhere, except for our design surface, which is dynamic, and that's the whole purpose of the application. Nowhere in our entire UI do we ever new up an element. We always define them in XAML and hook them up in various ways using data binding or, you know, element names or things like that. So,
and you have all of these in, or supported by three resource dictionaries.
Yeah. So what we essentially have is a different set of projects, each of which has a resources section, and the resources section has all of our XAML assets. I mean, this is our framework project, which is basically results in a framework DLL, which is used by all of the expression products, and it contains the common look and feels and common controls and things like that. Similarly, various projects that we have, for example, we have a project for our project system, our project tree and create project dialog and stuff like that. It has its own set of XAML resources, and so we actually have multiple DLLs, and each of the DLLs has their own set of XAML resources and images, and you know, some of them are reused across, some of them are not. So.
Hmm. Cool. All right. Well, that takes care of most of the questions I had. It's good to see Blend 2 open. If you want to show Blaine 3, you could do it. Yeah. Otherwise, we might have to wait a little longer.
Yeah, I think we should wait for a little bit more. We have some more work to do, but I'm very excited about what's coming in the future. Okay. I think people will be very happy as well. I hope.
Thanks, Uni.
Thank you.